Kaya Biz with Gugule Tumfuphi on Kaya 959.
There's an interesting dynamic at play here, where all eyes have really zoned into the ruling party, the ANC specifically, in terms of their big ticket items that they've placed on their wish list and how this might exceed their budget expectations. These red flags have been raised and brought to major concerns, as has been alluded to by Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana, who also serves as the ANC's head of economic transformation. To help us understand some of these outcomes and, of course, getting some clarity in terms of balancing government structures versus party structures and finances, and, of course, seeking some clarity as to where the coffers really are as we look to attain certain levels of growth, development and, of course, transformation across South Africa, where is this money going to come from? To help us unpack this, we joined on the line by two guests this evening, Duma Qubule, who is the founding director at the Centre for Economic Development and Transformation, also joined by Dr. Ntanti Mthandi, Senior Lecturer for Finance of Finance at Gibbs Business School. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your time with us this evening. I'm quite excited to hear your thoughts with regard to this particular story. But I guess before we expand into the 73.5 billion rand wish list and the trade-offs that the finance minister has said would have to take place to make the items on the wish list actually come true, let's actually start off by evaluating the landscape regarding party funds versus state funds and making sure that there is, I guess, clarity in terms of how these are managed, appropriated and, of course, used within the South African economic system. Duma, perhaps you can lead us in this conversation first as we hear your thoughts regarding these ideals. Oh, Duma's just dropped the line, unfortunately, but we'll get his feedback shortly. Dr. Mthandi, perhaps you can lead us in this conversation then by helping us evaluate and understand the difference between party funding structures versus that of the state.
Hello, Google. I didn't catch the last bit. I think there's a bit of interference on the line. Can you hear me well?
We've got you loud and clear, Dr. Mthandi. I'm hoping that you can hear me clearly too, but I am aware that technology is not always the greatest. I was elaborating that before we get into the story, perhaps help us seek some clarity, first things first, regarding the line that is often crossed regarding party funding or party funds versus funds of the state.
Well, I can't say really I'm an expert on party funding, but there's a clear distinction. The funds of the state, it's money largely contributed by taxpayers or the government bureaus, and it's clearly for programs that Parliament has approved through the parliamentary process when money bills are allocated. And then parties themselves raise money directly from individuals who wish to contribute or who support that mission. And although Parliament grants some money to parties, it really provides more oversight in the sense that parties report where they get the money from, right? And reports what they did with the parliamentary funds that they were allocated. So the two things are really just completely different.
Indeed. And we appreciate that, especially given, as you said, that that's not necessarily your background. But as we've highlighted that, I'm keen to get your initial thoughts and reaction to the sentiment that's been shared by the Finance Minister, Enoch Godongwana, essentially saying to the ANC that their party's project wish list requires certain trade-offs if they need to make it happen. This comes at a very interesting time because it reveals not only the financial pressures, but of course, I guess, the disconnect within the establishment of the ANC. But how help us understand more around this wish list and, of course, the budgetary requirements which exceed 73.5 billion rand.
I think Enoch is still pretty much operating on the, you know, on the austerity framework that was left by Tito Mboweni. And partially, in a way, you feel a bit sorry for him because partially he has to. Largely, I think, because there's a lot of lack of coordination between Treasury and the Reserve Bank. I'm just sorry. This might get a bit technical for the listeners, but the long and the short of it is South Africa has been, I'm sure you've been reporting on your show, has been having very large trade surpluses in the recent past. Mm-hmm. But the trade surpluses really started coming through from 2016, and they've moved from being trade surpluses into being current account surpluses. In a way, that should lessen the fiscal constraint. But our Reserve Bank has not been willing to intervene in the markets. and reduce the interest rates at which government borrows, right? And the primary driver of government debt dynamics is what we call the growth-adjusted interest rate, R minus G, or the interest growth rate differential, whichever way you want to call it. Mm-hmm. So the higher the interest rate at which government borrows compared to the growth rate, the more the debt climbs. And in turn, the government has to cut spending, has to reduce spending.
Yep.
We've seen this government cut spending in healthcare spending, yep, in a pandemic. We've seen them cut education spending in a recession. We've also seen them cut social assistance spending when a lot of people are really strained. A huge part of that reason is because of those debt dynamics. That the interest rate which the government pays is so much higher than the growth rate, right?
Exactly. And I want us to pause there perhaps, Dr. Mtanti, because I'd like to bring Duma into the conversation very briefly, if we may. Just to expand on this, you mentioned something so important. Government has been trying to reduce cutting in terms of spending, but maybe in the wrong places, as you correctly highlight. Health and education, far from the kind of discounts or budgetary cuts that we should be taking on. But Duma, I guess to add to the thoughts and the sentiment that's been shared by Dr. Mtanti, I'm keen to explore the budgetary cuts, the project expansion, wish list that the ruling party has. It almost appears as though there's a significant disconnect here in terms of understanding the needs on the ground, what needs to be prioritized, and of course the trade-offs that are required in order to make this happen. Share your thoughts here, Duma.
Okay, so there's a presentation made by Danny Roderick to the Presidential Economic Advisory Council, and he says, you know, what is acceptable in terms of economic policy globally has changed. And central bankers were inflation hawks and conservatives, but now they encourage fiscal spending. He said we've gone from debt fears to preference for overheating the economy, as we've seen in the U.S., where they want to overheat the economy to lift the limit. And we've gone from, and so he named a lot of things that have changed. And then the president, in his opening remarks at the Lekgotla, he says at the beginning that he repeats this. He says, with the onset of the pandemic, there's a shift in global economic policy trends that we can learn from. In several advanced countries, there's been a shift from conservative neoliberal approach towards the encouragement of fiscal spending. And then the finance minister goes and contradicts that immediately afterwards. So I just want to say that I think the reading of the reporting by the media was not balanced in terms of what was said in that speech. Because what you see in Google is that the revision of the GDP, we suddenly have lots more fiscal space. We've gone from 80% to 71% debt to GDP ratio. We also now have the government had cash of 333 billion rand at the end of March. And if you minus that, we've got a net debt ratio of 65%. So there's no universe in the world in which we have a high debt to GDP ratio. And I just have to repeat that our debt to GDP ratio is not high. There is fiscal space for us to provide support to the economy, but the government is doing the opposite of what governments throughout the world are doing. Governments throughout the world have decided to spend their way out of this crisis. And as the previous speaker was saying, our austerity policies, which are working against us, it is 50 billion rand cuts to health, 25 billion rand to higher education, 25 billion rand to basic education, and 36 to social grants, and so on and so on. And the army, it's 19.5 billion rand. And so we can't grow while you cut the economy. Growth means that there, and then last thing, Cook, that I was really disappointed in, is that in the presentation, the infrastructure fund that the government talked about in 2018 was launched by the president as 400 billion, then it became a 100 billion infrastructure fund. And then now, this budget allocated only 4 billion rand towards infrastructure, but the finance minister's presentation says 2.3 billion rand of that 4 billion rand has been underspent. So we're going to use it to fund the public sector wage bill. So you're taking from infrastructure, and now you've only now got 1.7 billion rand towards your own infrastructure policy. I think that is actually, I can't understand how that can be. And if you've been following this, I'm sure you've had many people like Mr. Ramakopa talking about all the government infrastructure plans on your show many times. But the fact that they've only been able to mobilize 1.7 billion rand for me, that is shocking, yeah.
And that's quite concerning, right? Because unless we see the necessary infrastructure spend, that decreases our opportunities to really catapult growth within South Africa's economy. I'm keen to unpack and understand as well what this means for structural reform that we've been hearing about that needs to take place in order to assist South Africa into a more sustainable economic trajectory and position. It almost seems as though we're working backwards here, Duma.
Yes. So when you model the structural reforms and you say how much are they supposed to deliver? So let's take Eskom. Eskom, actually, they're going to build renewable energy. I worked it out. It's 25 billion rand a year for 3 years starting next year. That's 0.5% of GDP a year. And then Transnet, it's about 10 billion rand every year for a decade. So now if you add them together, if you have to meet an NDP target of investment, we're talking about 900 billion rand annually. And this two structural reforms, which is the flagship of the program, will only close 4% of that shortfall. So what I'm trying to say is that we have to go beyond these structural reforms, and the government has to start investing in their own economy. And the main reason for the collapse of the investment since 2015 has been a collapse of what I call a public sector investment strike, not a private sector investment strike. So the public sector stopped investing in the economy since 2015, before COVID, and until the government explains how they're going to reverse that trend, then we can't have this infrastructure-led recovery that they're talking about here.
A very valid point there, Duma. Dr. Mtanti, I'm hoping that you can help us and hear us clearly on the line, just to wrap with your concluding remarks, and I guess building on some of the arguments that Duma has laid already, that government is not redirecting spend in the right places, we're failing on reaching the targets regarding infrastructure spend, and I guess not adequately implementing structural reforms that we require. What does this mean in terms of the outlook then for South Africa's economic recovery? And can we fix it? Are there areas where we can realign in order to make sure that the priorities do change?
Yeah, as my person showed Google, all I would say is unless there's greater coordination, formal or informal, between Treasury and the Reserve Bank, it's going to be pretty difficult for the fiscus to really drive spending. And right now, the fiscus needs to drive this recovery. They need to spend. And it's comparatively safe for the country because, as I was saying, we are a net creditor. Our net international position is positive. Our trade surplus is positive. Our current account is positive. So we can spend. But if you look at the long-term interest rates, they're varying for government between 9 and 10%. They're simply too high. Unless the Reserve Bank acts and reduces those 10-year yields, so engages in some sort of quantitative easing and creates the fiscal space for Treasury to spend, you'll keep on having this problem that Treasury is trying to restrict the growth of the debt stock, right? Because the interest rates are so high and it feels it needs to cut. So unless this coordination between those two, there is really very little that necessarily Treasury on its own can do.
Seeks lots of collaborative efforts, as you correctly state, and making sure that we actually implement. We've done enough of the talking, we've got the right policies, but it's just about making sure that we redirect our funding in the adequate spaces. Gentlemen, I thank you for your time this evening. Thank you for contributing to this conversation, and most importantly, thank you for your patience as well. Well aware of the technical gremlins that we have in the background, but thank you for bearing with us due to limited time pressures. That was our two guests, Duma Qobule, founding director at the Center for Economic Development and Transformation, and Dr. Ntati Mtati, who is a senior lecturer of finance at Gibbs Business School, helping us unpack dilemma that we do see government in at the moment, not adequately applying spending in the right spaces in South Africa. We've been cutting on spending, but unfortunately, health and education, not necessarily the right moves. Minimal spend that's been attained in terms of our infrastructure investment opportunities. And these are critical spaces, because unless you have a healthy workforce that is able to grow and contribute to the economy, well, our objectives to actually see strong and a sustainable recovery within our economy are just delayed. So we certainly hope that these are elements that we as voters take into consideration as we prepare to register this weekend for the local government elections and, of course, make our way to the polls on the 1st of November.
Kaya Biz with Guguletu Mfupi. Monday to Thursday, 6 to 8 p.m. on Kaya 959.